Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy, and Brett Beer is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy, out cold. Brett Beer does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Well, you only get 12 of these a year, folks. It's a pay-per-view week, and it's an Anik and Florian podcast for you on a Monday. It's episode like 317 of this goddamn thing. Good to be with you Monday, September 20th, 2021. I'm not much of an award show guy, but because I said goddamn off the top of the show, it got me thinking. I saw some gentleman go up and accept an award at the Emmys last night, and he said, because I'm not allowed to swear up here, and then he proceeded to say every cuss in the book. So he was basically bleeped out for 7 seconds. I immediately went and told my kids. You know, Riley actually was watching at the time. And it's like perfect if your father swears and you see this guy, right? Because all day, I don't think it's a big deal to cuss in front of your children. I don't go out of my way to do it. But obviously, they've heard me say fuck a million times at this point in time. And they don't swear at school. So that's fine. But I'm watching the Emmys for a minute with Riley. And of course, this dude who she sees in this fancy tuxedo come up to accept this award at this stuffy event. And he says, well, I can't swear up here. So fuck shit. You know, my daughter's like, whoa, this guy's just like my dad. How are you, Kenny? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. I'm excited for this pay-per-view this weekend, man. It should be fun.
Couple things off the top. I have a gift for you. Anik and Florian Podcast Pocket Squares, courtesy of my tailor, Mark Russell. You like
nice.
That?
Nice. Yeah, I so like I that, dude.
One for you. Excuse me. Two for you. One for Cody Merrow. None for Longo. I'm not even sure what he...
Does Longo own a suit?
Does not own a suit. I guarantee you. And if it does, he's got one. Over under one. I think we should do some bets.
Right.
Yeah.
Might not know what a pocket square is, that Ray Longo. Yeah. His black suit in the closet probably as dusty as this blue microphone that I dusted off for today's show. If you're watching on YouTube, yes, I'm in my son's bedroom. We've had some issues there. We're getting the master bathroom renovated, and it's taken about a year at this point. No, it's just taking a while. So I'm in my son's bedroom today. But we have a lot to get into today. Kenflo, I bought Bitcoin this morning, by the way. I'm not going to reveal how much, but yes. Another Bitcoin purchase. Now, I know there's plenty of people out there who don't know what it is, and I'm among them, right? And I know there are also people probably like yourself who buy it monthly in a recurring way or however you do what you do. I'm just letting you know, as a Bitcoin enthusiast and proponent, that I bought some this morning at 43,000 and change, and lo and behold, it's already over 44. Let's go.
That's how you do it, John. I'm so proud of you. All right. 3 days ago, I bought some, and I bought some this morning again.
All right.
You gotta buy them when it goes on sale.
All right. I like it. All right.
Yeah.
It's actually more than my twin bro and I thought we would get out of you today, that you did make a couple of purchases over the last few days.
Yes, all right. I did.
So, of course, coming up, we will have predictions, seven of them, by the way, for UFC 266, Volkanovski versus Ortega. But we want to begin headlines, of course, with a recap of UFC Fight Night, Smith versus Spann. How about Anthony Lionheart Smith? I mean, I got a lot to say about this individual, but this is a big win now. Three straight for Anthony Lionheart Smith, and didn't take him more than 3 minutes and 47 seconds to submit Ryan Superman Spann Kenflo. What'd you think of the UFC main event last Saturday night?
You know, now we're seeing a consistent Anthony Smith, an Anthony Smith that is mentally, physically, and technically there. I thought he did exactly what he needed to do in that fight against Spann. I thought more than anything else, I think those hooks were landing and Spann just wasn't seeing those shots. So that was nice to see. And I think, you know, he had the big advantage on the ground. That's where he ended up taking it. I thought this was an awesome performance from him.
So we're in an era where the UFC roster might be around 700 fighters. Maybe it's a little bit south of that, right? But you're seeing a lot of fighters get opportunities on short notice and otherwise getting into Dana White's Contender Series and taking advantage of the COVID-19 climate to whatever degree. Anthony Smith seemed pretty heated in advance of this matchup, right? And not that it was anything that worked against him, right? It was something that he was able to channel in a positive way, but seemed like he took issue with some things that Ryan Spann said leading up to the fight. And I think the greater point I'm making in a not super great way is that it took Anthony Smith 27 fights to get into the UFC. He had 27 pro fights before Ryan Spann made his pro debut. So I think Anthony Smith, in a broader sense, is sort of taking issue with a lot of guys who maybe think they're on his level or who have put in the time and the finances and the energy over 20 years to get where he is. And he doesn't believe they have. And obviously this result is a chance for him to puff out his chest a little bit.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it was. You know, I think that when you have a guy in Anthony Smith who has fought for as long as he has, a guy who was in the UFC, was booted out of the UFC, then came back to prove himself. I think that, you know, those are kind of still old wounds a little bit that hurt. And he wanted to go out there and prove to Spann and everyone else who doubted him that he belongs in the UFC, and not only that he belongs, but that he's elite. And right. I think he proved that against Spann. I think that Spann is a very dangerous guy. I think the difference in that fight, though, and it's a very simple thing, but I think it's an important point, is that Spann was fighting knowing that he had to finish that fight on the feet. And when you're afraid of going to the ground and you know that that guy standing across from you has a huge advantage in another area, and you find yourself in that area, you're going to see desperation. And being desperate in any spot, let alone being in the octagon, is a terrible place to be. And you could see that nervousness. And for Anthony Smith, he just seemed cool, comfortable, and ready to rock. And he went out there and delivered an excellent performance because of it.
And you can only say the Mark Montoya coach 2021 version of Anthony Smith is underrated on the feet. And go look at the body of work, right? 36 pro wins, 34 finishes, 2 decision wins in a career that's got to be coming up on 15 years, maybe not quite that long, right? But just 2 decision wins, just 1 decision win in the UFC. He has now 11 UFC wins, Kenny. Since returning in 2016, you and I called his UFC debut in 2013 against Antonio Braga Neto. He was cut 0-1 in the UFC at that point in time. 11 UFC wins since, a remarkable, remarkable career. I mean, go look at some of the scalps on his resume. And now it seems as though he wants Alexander Rokic again. Rokic, number 3 in the world, Kenflo, seems to be interested in that for December. So, you know, makes a lot of sense. And it's a title eliminator of sorts, I think, next for the rolling steamroll on Anthony Lionheart Smith.
I think that's an excellent fight. I've seen a big difference in Anthony Smith's striking. You know, still, is it the most technical or the most dangerous? No, but again, when he puts it all together with his whole package that he presents in the UFC, I think that he's a tough out for anybody. And I like that fight against Rokic. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think Anthony Smith's lead hand has improved tremendously. We saw that in his previous fight with the jab. We saw it in this fight with the hook. he continues to get better. And I like Anthony Smith to win that fight against Rakic as of right now.
How about that? How about that? Hard not to after what we saw Saturday night. And I know you like a guy who knows his way around a choke as well. I mean, I talk as a layman about offensive jiu-jitsu sort of being a lost art. I mean, I do see oftentimes when guys are going for a body lock on someone's back, there are errors that I can see having watched this sport for 15 years, but this dude's a real threat on the ground, man, not just to sort of put you in danger, but to choke you unconscious.
Absolutely. And I love the way he integrates his ground and pound as well. You know, a lot of elite jiu-jitsu guys don't know how to use their strikes to set up their submissions. Anthony Smith is a guy who knows how to let his jiu-jitsu work and be effective in a real fight. And, you know, the pressure he puts with his strikes is what leads to a lot of these submissions. So it's beautiful to see.
And I'm certainly not trying to cast Ryan Spann as a fighter that somehow backed his way into the UFC, right? I mean, just because Anthony Lionheart Smith had almost 30 pro fights before he made his pro debut, Ryan Spann is not young in this game per se. He's been a pro since 2013. He comes from a relatively big camp. And I think he and the general Saif Saud understood the type of challenge that was in front of them. But I don't know, man, it seemed like Spann was saying and doing all the right things leading up to this fight to get him in a position to succeed. But you're right, in terms of paths to victory, certainly were more for Anthony Smith. And I think I can say in retrospect, minus 160, maybe more value than I even thought on Anthony Smith.
Yeah, I think for Spann, again, getting over that, you know, I guess, insecurity or lack of effectiveness with his wrestling and jiu-jitsu, I think is going to do wonders for his game. And it could be that he's working on it, but it does take time. It takes time to be comfortable, and it takes even more time to say, you know what, if it goes to the ground, I got you there as well.
Yeah, right.
The sensitivity, the timing, all that stuff in grappling really takes time. I've been doing it for, you know, a few decades, and you know, if I take a few weeks off, my timing isn't going to be there. So it's something that needs to be consistently addressed. And for some fighters, and I'm not saying this is the case for Spann, taking that time away, or perhaps focusing on striking when you should be working on your weaknesses, you know, will definitely hurt you.
How are the jiu-jitsu seminars in Bend, Oregon with Mac Danzig, by the way? How'd that all go?
It was great. I had a couple sold-out seminars over there in Bend.
Sold out?
With Mac. Standard, yeah, there we go.
Take your shoes off before you go on the mat, too.
The little gi and no gi. It was great to train up there with Mac as well, and you know, to see how he's doing. That was the first time I had seen his gym. And dude, that area, Central Oregon, is absolutely beautiful as well. Got a chance to go on some hikes and some trips into nature, and it was beautiful.
I love hiking, but as I sort of vicariously went through your trip on your Instagram page, I was thinking, man, a lot of jiu-jitsu and a lot of heights. Like, this doesn't look like the trip for me. You know? Cody says a lot of good marijuana there in Oregon. I wouldn't know.
How would he know?
Right. So, Kenny, at times in your career as a broadcaster or fighter, you have been somewhat of a fashion icon, but I don't necessarily cast you as a particularly vain guy. That being said, if somebody kicked your teeth in on fight night, as tough as you are, I mean, do you just keep going like Devin Clark did against Iwan Kutelaba? Because I know I wouldn't. I'd be looking for my coach to throw in the towel there at that point.
Bro, here's the thing. Here's the thing. All right. Teeth is one thing, right? I got some big chompers. I got huge chiclets. These things are still on my teeth. These are mine. These aren't fake.
Nice.
Okay. I tried not to take too many there. It's one thing to chip your tooth or break. It looked like it pushed in his gums, John.
Right.
Like it looked like the part of his gums were pushed back into his mouth and separated from the rest of his jaw. I mean, I haven't seen anything like that. I don't think I've ever seen that. It sounds like it was a knee, or it looks like it was a knee that was thrown.
Yeah.
I think that's what Kutelaba was saying. But my goodness, Devin Clark is tough as hell, dude, to go through that. That is one of those injuries that you don't see too often. I don't think we've really seen it in the UFC ever.
Yeah.
But whatever that is, I hope it can be fixed. I hope he's okay. And man, I don't know. It looked like it was just a gruesome injury that I don't know can be rectified. I mean, it looked like a part of his jaw was just cracked and folded in. That was nasty.
So I follow Devin Brown Bear Clark on social media, and it looks as though they put like braces on it for now. And he was talking through it as best he could. But
okay,
I don't know, man. If there's another injury worth talking about at UFC 266, we might have to add a segment to the program called like the checkup with Dr. Gus Florian or something. Hey, if your dad doesn't want the gig, Dr. David Abbasi is sort of an emerging doctor in the MMA space. And I know he would be more than willing to join us if his schedule allows. But
yeah.
We got to get Gus on the program.
We could.
He listens, right? Does he watch or does he just listen?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think he watches. I'm sure he's more of a YouTuber.
Okay. Dr. Florian, if you're out there and you're listening or watching to this episode, please just write a tweet to us and acknowledge as much. And it's a standing offer. We got to get him on. Can you believe we've gone 317 episodes? We had Keith on once.
Yeah.
Dad's never been on the goddamn program.
My dad has an accent, but who knows? Maybe he'll get hired by like, you know, ESPN or something after that. He goes on a few episodes.
Yeah, right. There you go. Yeah, it sounded like you were just going to say maybe he'll get high or something. How does your dad, I wonder how, Dr. Florian, if you're out there, Gus, how do you feel about how much I swear on the program? Because it seems like your son doesn't swear as much on the podcast, but when you and I talk by phone, every other word out of Kenny's mouth is fuck. But when we do the podcast, he falls in line. All right, what else do I have here in this opening segment? There were a lot of sensational performances. Nate Maness rallying over Tony Gravely. Armand Tsarukyan is a lightweight contender for me. I really want to see him against some elite lightweight competition. Joaquin Buckley with another highlight. Raquel Pennington looking lean as ever. Rong Zhu, I think the youngest fighter on the roster, getting a big finish for his first UFC win. So a lot of different highlights and a lot of different things that we could get into. Ken Flo, I want to get your thoughts on this, though. The UFC Hall of Fame induction ceremony is coming up in 3 days. And it's not the 2021 ceremony. It's the 2020 ceremony because we're inducting last year's class, of course, COVID-19. George St. Pierre will be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame on Thursday, your longtime teammate and compadre. And I don't know if he's going to get a skin fade before. I kind of hope so. He seems pretty attached to the lettuce at this point in time. But John Jones will be on stage as well. Big weekend coming up, of course. And your guy GSP set to headline the class.
Bullshit. GSP is overrated. I don't get it. I don't understand the whole GSP.
How do you get it?
I mean, it's – yeah. Obviously a clear pick right there. A guy who I have looked up to for a very long time, had the honor and pleasure of training with many times. You know, not only a Hall of Famer, in my mind, he's the GOAT, you know, two division champion. You knew exactly what he was going to do. You couldn't stop it. Simplicity, directness, effectiveness, consistency. He's the man, and it's well-deserved. Awesome to see.
What an icon. You know, I will never forget attending UFC 100 and watching him turn the takedown into just a thing of beauty against Thiago Alves. Had to take him down 25 times, and you were there with me. I mean, oh, no, you weren't, because you were training for UFC 101, or maybe you did come out.
I had to go to promote 101, and I was there live to see it, and absolutely couldn't agree more. That was quite the performance. This is when Thiago Alves was in his prime and looked like the Incredible Hulk. So, yeah.
Right. That was a night that I will remember, really developing a appreciation for offensive wrestling and MMA, just hearing that crowd ooh and ah with every takedown from George Rush St. Pierre. You know what would be interesting, or would have been interesting, I should say? I was thinking about this over the weekend. So Carlos Condit, of course, announces his retirement, and I'm super happy for the Natural Born Killer getting a couple wins late in his career, because he went out on a relatively high note. He did lose to Max Griffin in his final fight, but he won two of his last three, so all was not lost. But it would have been interesting if George St. Pierre had actually been finished that night by Carlos Condit and not rallied back or recovered from that head kick that was repurposed. Yeah. Imagine if GSP had to recover from a knockout loss to Carlos Condit at that stage of his career, in and around his fighting prime. That would have been very interesting. I know he went on to largely clean out the division, other guys, Hendricks and what have you. But I don't know, man. It would have been interesting to see George have to respond to that type of loss the way he did to the Matt Serra loss earlier in his career.
Right. And just knowing GSP, I know he would have responded like the champion that he is. And, you know, the other thing that's worth pointing out is that George did get hurt. We saw him have to deal with adversity many times throughout his career. That welterweight division was just insane. It still is obviously extremely tough, but the fact that he was able to deal with that adversity and find a way to come back and win time and time again after that Matt Serra loss is really what defined George. And no one trained harder than him. He was a true martial artist and truly one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in the sport.
All right, Longo coming up in about 60 seconds. But as you all know, UFC 266 coming up fast and furious. And DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC, has a knockout offer for this weekend. DraftKings is offering new customers $150 in free bets instantly if you bet just $1 on any fight before the main event. Pretty simple. You bet just $1 on any UFC 266 fight, and DraftKings Sportsbook will give you $150 in free bets instantly. And of course, if MMA is not your thing, why not? But MMA is certainly not the only offering at DraftKings Sportsbook. Great odds, propositions, promotions on football, golf, and so much more. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. And perhaps the best part is you can deposit and withdraw your cash literally whenever you want. So I'm coming up on my 10-year anniversary with the UFC, and I can sit here honestly and tell you UFC 266, as good a pay-per-view as we can put forth, and we wouldn't want you to miss out on all the action of UFC 266 with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. So, what do you need to do? Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code ANIC when you sign up to receive $150 in free bets instantly if you bet a dollar on UFC 266. That's code ANIC, A-N-I-K, to receive $150 instantly only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. Other restrictions apply. Let's get to Longo.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
It is always great to see you, and I really appreciate the voicemail. And I just have to say, like, I don't want to, you know, soften up the whole show off the top, but you're just a super thoughtful guy. Like, I can understand why my wife just listens to you talk. She doesn't listen to the podcast, but when she watches you coach or watches you with athletes, like, she just can tell you're the real article. And the condolence call meant a lot to me. So thank you, bro.
Yeah, no, I don't want to get into it either. I'll see you probably this week, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We'll definitely talk, but please tell your wife. Can you just tell your wife, please never listen to the podcast? This technically isn't. This isn't
last
me.
Last week would have shocked her.
This isn't me, dude. John. I'm just trying to get you guys some
ladies. No, I understand.
I'm not even joking.
That was so fucking funny, though.
And the guy on the phone was me. No, this is. And that's a serious subject. I don't even want to play around
with
it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you are a needle mover. There's no doubt about it. But I hope you wouldn't say stuff just for ratings, Ray, because we try to keep stuff. All right. So
I'm just trying to feed the streets over in Miami.
Boca Raton it is. So I don't know if I should lead with like UFC Fight Night or Merab or what, but I feel like I kind of got to start with the machine, Merab Dwalish Willie, seeing as he's 5 days out from this fight against Marlon Moraes. Talk to me, Ray. I sound more excited than you, I think.
Well, I'll tell you. So there's 11:30 in the morning excitement. There's 4:30 in the afternoon excitement. So you're going to get the 11:30 in the morning excitement.
That's right. I forgot about that time slot change and how good you were in the late afternoon.
No, he's look, this is a huge fight against a very, very dangerous guy. So, you know, I think I got him the right sparring, and I think he's got some good looks. I put him in with like bigger guys, so he knows what that's going to feel like. Because I think Marlon's a heavy handed and heavy kick heavy guy. So look, he's either get him out of there, or you got 15 minutes of hell,
just total hell. And that is sort of where I want to go to Kenny on this, because when you prepare for certain athletes on this roster, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, right? It's like, oh man, right? Like that's a real specific challenge, right? And I don't know that Merab is that specific a challenge per se, but if you're Magic Marlon Moraes, Kent, and you're fighting this guy, you're a 2-1 underdog. You know, what is the first order of business? Just keep him off my leg at all costs. Like, what are you trying to do here?
Well, you know, it's like the great chess players. You don't prepare for their weak moves. You prepare for their best moves. And that's what he's got to prepare for. And I'm sure he's having some anxiety attacks thinking about it because a couple things. Moraes is a strong starter. He starts strong, but he finishes, you know, a little bit weak. Marab starts strong and finishes strong. Like he, you know, it might take him a little bit more than say a Moraes, but this kid does not stop. And he just keeps finding in other gear. And the fact that he comes from that grappling background, which has posed a lot of problems for Moraes, is going to be a problem. There's nowhere for you to rest and relax. And Moraes likes to hit and chill out. He's a technical guy, and Marab just wants to be in your face and make it a scrap. So that's a big challenge for Moraes. And Moraes is a fantastic and dangerous fighter, but it's just a really tough matchup for him.
Listen, he's gotten a lot of guys out, Kenny, with one shot.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, he is. I think this is the time, though, because he's not, you know, obviously he's not on an incline.
Right.
He's on a decline. But super, super dangerous. Wait, the odds on that fight were what, John?
Marab Dwalishwili -235. Marlon Moraes +190. So if listeners don't know what that means, you would have to put $235 on Marab to win $100. Whereas if you put just $100 on Marlon Moraes, it would pay you $190. 290 because you get your C note back if he wins. So yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think does that surprise you, Ray, or no?
I think that's, you know, I think that's pretty high. Yeah. I would have thought it would have been a little closer.
So I think it's properly priced, right? I mean, Marab could be 8-0 in the UFC for all intents and purposes. Yeah. I think they're handicapping him in that way.
Actually, not it could be 8-0. I told him the other night, you are 8-0.
You really? No, you're right.
I'm not even joking. Those losses, I'll fight for those till the death.
I know.
He actually is 8-0, and you know, and he's grown on every fight, which is what I love more than anything about coaching a guy. He made corrections since the day I met this kid. He got out wrestled by Ricky Bandejos, the kid that fights in Bellator now. He's good. And man, that's it. That's the last time he ever got out wrestled.
Yeah.
You know, he just made it his way. Then he got stuck in the mount against a guy, Darren Mimer. He lost the fight. Not happening again. I mean, Ricky Simone, he was like a madman jumping over him. He was just so excited. He calmed down. He controls better. He's always made the adjustment, this guy. and one of the reasons why, win or lose with him, I know he's going to make the adjustment. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
so
that's the truth.
He never let those losses get him down either. You know what I mean? It's like even with the Ricky Simone, it was a lot of controversy. And he rolled right through that better than anybody. So I love where the kid's at. I love his attitude. It's win or learn, you know, that saying. It's him. So yeah. I like this fight. He's in shape, and I'm everybody's excited. I got my coaching partner back, Matt Serra. So I'm happy about that. That's a big deal.
So your NFL boycott remains, but Matt Serra's corner boycott is ending, and he will be in the corner of Marab Dwalishwili. Is that the case? I'm saying no. Matt Serra retired from cornering. Has that changed?
How'd you sneak in the NFL though? Is what I'm wondering. Where'd that come from?
I don't know.
Where the hell did that pop in? Is that what you're thinking about right now?
I don't know. My brain is fiery and firing. Yeah. Weird cylinders today. I'm just asking if Matt Serra, who recently retired from cornering mixed martial arts athletes, is coming back.
He's back.
All right, he's back. I could just ask the UFC, Zach Gandito, for the corner audio sheet if you want to do that. But I was just
Back. Oh, you don't have to. Right. You don't have to ask Zach.
All right.
You don't have to
30-foot octagon for Marlon Moraes, I think, is better than fighting Marab in the 25-footer. You just mentioned, though, Marab's in shape, right? Like, oh yeah,
what is Marab's in shape? Exactly.
He's always in shape.
Thanks though for that. I mean, if you're trying to push ratings, can you not just tell the audience that Marab's in shape? I mean, are you kidding me? No, seriously. So I know that you are very good at teaching cardiovascular strength and conditioning things. Is obviously Tony Ricci's deal. Is that his name, Tony Ricci?
Oh, the best.
But I know you know what athletes need to do to realize a good cardio base. Have you ever met anyone like Merab in terms of the output and just the, I don't know, man, I've never seen, I don't know that there's a point of comparison on the whole roster, maybe Tony Ferguson, but have you ever trained or coached anybody like Merab in terms of the way he's wired?
Everybody's different, obviously, but I tell you, there's guys in the gym. We have another up and coming guy. He will be in the UFC. Pumi Nakuda, his gas tank is
flyweight.
I got to tell you, man, I don't know what I'm looking at with him. He's putting the time in too, and he's got a good gas tank. So yeah, I'm going to say there are guys in the gym. I tell you what, Merab does definitely more. He probably spars 100 rounds a week. That's where he get, you know, like, and it's
ladies,
not, you know, it's not
breaking news on the Anakin Florian podcast. That's what Merab Dwalis Willis spars 100 rounds a week.
You know, Merab
200 rounds a year.
He'd rather spar than do anything. So you know what I mean. So he gets, he's got great cardio and he loves to fight. So that makes it even that much better. Can you know what I mean? There's no stress or nothing that's going to drain him. He's not
right.
You know, right. That's the problem. He's very, very comfortable in there and he's very, very comfortable in chaos, you know? So that's not, that's not going to get to him. And he's surrounded by really good guys.
And I also just have to say, cause Cody chimed in, not only all of that on Merab Dwalishvili, also the best soul in MMA, right? Like he really is just such a good dude. I can't emphasize that enough.
You know, John, just a grounded guy that comes from another country that really just appreciates everything. I mean, last night I had a great group in there last night. And, I was like, Merab, do you ever think you'd be here, buddy? Like, it's just, he's such a great guy. I mean, he owns a house and he's so grateful that you would want to do anything for this guy. And you need something, he'll be there for you. He's just a throwback, man. He's a throwback to the good old days, you know? And you don't see that, you know, for a kid his age. I mean, you do, but I mean, it's far and few in between. But he's just squared away. He's just a great guy.
So let's keep it on UFC 266, and then we can circle back to Devin Clark's grill and Anthony Smith's performance, time permitting. Oof. But Nick Diaz last competed in mixed martial arts January 31st, 2015. No contest against Anderson Silva. He's fighting on Saturday night. So I've never called a Nick Diaz fight. You know, Kenny and I called UFC 243 for the movie theaters. January of 2012, months after I joined the company. But this will be my first time. I have no Nick Diaz notes in my fighter library, you know. What are your thoughts on Nick Diaz, Ray Longo, returning after 6+ years away?
Well, listen, man, I've said it 100 times. One of my favorite guys, if not my favorite guy in MMA. He's just I think he's maybe misunderstood, but to me, he's just a nice guy. He always gives you an honest answer. He'll tell you exactly what he's thinking. I think, you know, the 5 years, I do think those guys stay in shape, right? They're not going anywhere. So I'm going with Nick Diaz, and I love Robbie Lawler, but you know, he hasn't been the Robbie Lawler that we know either. So, but, you know, I think that's a good fight. That's going to be a good scrap. And I think it's going to go with Robbie landing some big punches and Nick just doing what he does. He's going to eat them and come back with 5 and 6 punch combinations until he breaks you down.
Kenny, a popular narrative going into this fight is that, if anybody can come back from 6 years away, it's Nick Diaz. What are your thoughts on Nick's ability to perform like a prime Nick Diaz after 6 years away, at least from mixed martial arts competition?
You know, listen, it's no easy task. I think that for a long time, Nick Diaz denied himself of some of the pleasures that other mixed martial arts.
What was that noise, Ray? I mean, respect for the audience. Am I supposed to let that go?
Can we lower the microphones?
Blowing snot rockets over here.
Do you guys know what allergies are? Is that a word you never heard before?
Yeah, man.
You don't know what a freaking out.
It's COVID. He's got COVID again.
Holy.
Yeah, Ray, do you have any vaccination update, Ray? You got any? You get the poke yet, Ray?
Oh, my God.
You guys are too sensitive.
Hey, the worst part about that, the worst part about that is I'm sitting here like, man, I should probably mute Ray. And then all of a sudden,
isn't that amazing?
The audio is fantastic, though.
No, Cody, you better not edit any of that.
Tony, can you edit that out?
Cody, if you want to see me next Monday, actually, Cody knows this is an empty threat. He knows how badly I need him. But Cody, if you fucking want a job next Monday, you won't edit out Ray Longo's sound effects.
I'm gonna make it louder.
Hey, Ray, there is a mute button on that Skype machine if you do need to hawk anything else up before the end of the program.
Well, look at his face, Kenny. Look at him. He's disgusted. Those are involuntary. That's not voluntary. That's involuntary. Right. What do you think? I know it's coming on. I'm going to hit the mute button. It just jumps. It just,
I get it.
The post nasal drip. I got to get it out.
Well, yeah. Ask your wife, John. Ask Chrissy if she likes that.
Yeah. And hey, Ray, just hopefully if we go to the corner cam during Marab's fight, you don't have another episode on live television, because that would be a little bit of a bigger problem than the Anakin Florian podcast.
Well, John, if that happens, you have to address it on air.
This is a rough morning.
Marab, move your
Oh man!
I wonder what I'll be.
Honey, bring me a Zyrtec, please.
Make it two.
I wonder what I'm going to be thinking about when we go to the corner cam now for Longo and Sarah on Saturday night. I can tell you, first thing out of my mouth is probably going to be, "Oh, there's Matt Sarah, who has ended, however unceremoniously, his cornering boycott in time this week."
Didn't he say? He was just, I didn't listen to it, so I don't know, but didn't he say he was just taking a vacation?
Okay. All right. Yeah. So maybe
he's back from vacation. All right. He's back from vacation.
All right. That's good. All right. So, and then the last thing on UFC 266, very quickly before we circle back, time permitting, I know it's high noon on the East Coast, but Alexander Volkanovski and Brian Ortega. You know, Volko doesn't necessarily demand the attention of some of our other champions, but if you look up, he's going for 20 straight MMA wins this weekend.
Isn't that crazy?
I know a lot of people thought Holloway deserved better in their second meeting, but what do you think about Volkanovski and Ortega here coming up in five sleeps?
I think he's a very tough puzzle to figure out. You know, it's funny that because we don't, I don't think he's that active. And, you know, that's right. Why I think people, you know, I feel like I haven't seen both of these guys fight in a while, but especially Volkanovski.
You're right. It was supposed to go down March 27th and Volkanovski got COVID-19. So you're right. I mean, this fight alone has gotten a 6 or 7 month delay. So,
yeah. So, I think I'm, you know, man, like, again, I like Brian Ortega, but I like what he's done in the sport. I think Volkanovski is going to be tough for him to figure out. I think he's harder to hit than people think because of his stature, and he's got a great gas tank. He knows when to mix it up. And I think Volkanovski, what's the odds on that fight?
Care to venture a guess, or do you just want me to tell you?
I would think Volkanovski's the favorite. By I don't know, minus 180.
Pretty close, Raymond. Pretty good job there. Minus 160 for Volkanovski. Brian Ortega plus 140. So you're not far off there. So Devin Clark, how about getting those teeth busted in and then coming back and I believe winning the ensuing round, man. Again, man, got to acknowledge the toughness of these athletes. I know it was a big win and performance for Iwan Kutelaba, but people are talking about Devin Clark this week, rightfully so.
Yeah, no, come on, man. What a gutsy. You know what it is? It's funny. Sometimes it takes something like that to really get you going. And that's what you got to learn how to tap into quicker, right? Yeah. He had his teeth were busted up. If there's a time, you know, where it could go south, that would be the time. But he dug down deep and, like you say, won the third round.
I guess if you feel into your mouth maybe and it's like, all right, my teeth are compromised, but my gum line is still intact, maybe you're okay to do it. All right, before we let you go, I know you like good men in the sport. Anthony Lionheart Smith obviously qualifies.
Man.
How
Unreal.
About this guy, man?
Unreal. I mean,
36 pro wins, your thoughts?
I got to tell you, just when you fight him, make sure you know his name. That's number one. That's a prerequisite. Yeah. And don't talk shit. You know, because he's I tell you, he's a finisher too, man. Anthony Smith is violent, man. He really is. He's going to win those fights all day long. I don't think he's tough, man. And I think he fights with a chip on his shoulder, and he's a sweetheart when you meet him, obviously, but I think he fights with a chip on his shoulder, and he's very skillful, and he knows how to close the show just as good as anybody.
I don't know exactly how old he is, but there's no doubting the fact that he is getting better and not worse. And I think you're doing one or the other pretty much in mixed martial arts. I mean, I guess you could idol, I suppose, but there are a lot of athletes that aren't going to incline or ascend at this stage of their career. And we can't congratulate this guy enough. And I know I can't get through an episode when we talk about Anthony Smith without mentioning that home invasion, but like, go read about it. It's insane. And the further he gets removed from it, the better, I think, Ray. You know, again, you're really fighting for your life in your own home. And it just took him a while mentally and emotionally to get out the other side. And now I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he gets back into a title fight here in the next 18, 24 months.
He looks like he's on that trajectory for sure. And like you say, I'm just going to go back to the home invasion. Just horrible.
Dude.
Horrible. To have anything like that happen is just outright scary and just horrible. And I'm glad he's over everything, because he's definitely a handful. I think you'll see a big difference with that rematch that he's going to get.
Rocket Jeff.
Good for him, man. He stays in the present moment, that guy. He's good. Very, very good.
All right, Ray, we're going to get you out of here. Why are you so full of energy at 4:30? I happen to really like today's Ray Longo Minute. Is it a caffeine thing or just a PM thing? I mean, I wake up at 5 a.m. every day, so this is like probably the best time you could get me.
Nah, it's
You sound like you're fading fat. Am I wrong?
I have a lot of issues in the morning. Let's say that. All right. One of them is snorting.
Yeah.
That up again and embarrass me? Go ahead.
When do you get to Las Vegas?
I'll be there Wednesday night.
I land 11 p.m. Wednesday night, God willing. So we'll hopefully connect Thursday or Friday, my brother.
Well, we might be connecting at the airport. I think that's what time me and the Terra get in.
I might check a bag just so I can come haze you guys now.
I don't even want to tell you what airline we're flying, because there's a lot of creeps out there.
Delta.
Ken Flo.
Yeah.
What do we got?
Good to see you. Good to see you, Ray. Good luck, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's a big fight for this kid. Big fight. I'm excited.
Yeah. Get a W, Raymond. It's been a while, huh? No, I don't mean a while for you guys. No, please.
Is this really happening?
I didn't mean to say it that way. It came out wrong.
You got your hits in already, all right? Leave the guy alone, for Pete's
sake. You buried me on the snort. Now you got to just drive me further into the ground on...
Stop. He's already dead.
Jeez. Do you want an Anakin Florian podcast pocket square? Do you have a...
Hey, I don't want to... Oh, yeah. I got a bunch of... That's the only shirt I'm wearing in Vegas.
I was just going to say, we don't necessarily celebrate your regional wins on this show the way we do UFC wins. So I was going to say, it's been a while since we've had the chance to celebrate a UFC win on here. You know, I think Frabola maybe was the last guy who fought. It didn't necessarily go his way. So hopefully for your sake, next Monday, we're having a little Georgian celebration for Marab.
He's fucking attacking the steamroller. The guy's getting married. Wait, shout out to Matt Frivola, too. He's getting married with the night Marab's fighting. So
no way.
You have to miss the wedding. But, congratulations, Matt. You got a great girl. And unlike, don't listen to anything Anik says. You're coming back strong. We got this.
Frivola Mr. Frivola is going to be knocking on your door now, John. You got another guy knocking on your door.
A lot of people want to fight me out there.
For the record, you sent Matt Frivola shirts.
Of course, Cody. If I see another guy walk through the door with my shirt on again, I counted about 600 so far. Putting up the pictures.
Sending them to your entire squad. Great dude. Congratulate him on our behalf. And hey, we'll see you on Thursday, brother. Safe travels.
All right, take it easy, guys. I'll talk to you.
All right, the Ray Longo Minute every Monday at whatever time here on the Anik and Florian podcast. I mean, these dudes clearing their throats on live radio like it's nothing. All right, it's time for the pronunciation of the week before we get into our predictions for UFC 266 as we call on the executive producer, Cody Mero. Hi, Cody. Cody,
do you need to clear your throat before you answer, no, Cody, anything? No? Okay.
I thought he was doing an Oscar De La Hoya impression. I thought it was great.
Yeah, right.
I thought it was fine, you know?
So, Cody, you're 5-11 on the year on the pronunciation of the week. I mean, I don't know. I feel like the scoring's been pretty fair. This fighter reps the Nick Diaz Academy. He's a middleweight, 6-0 as a pro, but fought as a heavyweight, if I'm not mistaken, on Dana White's Contender Series. He makes his UFC debut this weekend against Carl Roberson. Cody Mero, of whom am I speaking, kid?
Well, we're in the middle of a rebuild, John. That's all I got to say about my record. Yeah, but. Right. So I think John's throwing me a ringer here, but I'm going to go against my better judgment and just say it how I think it's going to be said. Nick Maximoff.
All right, let's hear Nick.
Nicholas Maximoff.
Mauve.
Nicholas Maximoff.
Mauve.
That's where they got you. Maximoff.
So I watched his fight back, Cody, on Dana White's Contender Series, and my guy Fitzy went with Mauve. Paulie Felder went Nick Maximoff. So I voiced it over the weekend as Maximoff. So that's 5-12, Kenny, for Cody, if I'm not mistaken.
You've thrown him a lot of tricky ones, a lot of difficult. The degree of difficulty has been quite high, Cody. So I don't blame you.
I made up for it with my capping. Like when I come on here and I give fire picks, like I make up for it. Totally. You know, I'm giving out Gerald Mershart by submission as a minus or plus 180.
The moral of the story here with this whole pronunciation of the week is that, you know, there's a lot of people who think they have it right just because they're reading it. Again, John has the audio files. He knows how it's pronounced. Trust the motherfucker. Okay.
Well, thanks, Kenny. And if you want to hear some of the names that I could have thrown his way.
Oh, right. Sure.
Uros Medic, Manon Fjord, right, out of France. Jeez. How about Maida Bueno Silva?
Ah, parabens, Sean. Parabens.
For your partner, Kathleen. She liked that? Maida Bueno Silva?
John, it's been a while since you've been to Brazil, huh?
I know. It's fun. I'm guessing it's something.
I was his personal translator, by the way, back in the day.
Amazing, man. Sure
people just know that.
Oh, one menu's fine. Ken Flo's going to interpret it for me.
I have one thing. Sorry, I have one thing before you go.
Yes.
Talking about UFC 266, John. I know you're excited. 209, tattoo on the arm. Haven't done Nick Diaz prep. Is that one of the fighters that you're like, you don't care about how much time, like you might spend 3 or 4 hours prepping the Nick Diaz fight?
There's no doubt. I need a new answer when people ask me, oh, is there one fighter that you wish you could have had the chance to call one of his fights? You know, and for a while, George St. Pierre was the answer. And then he came back and fought Michael Bisping and I had the chance to do that. But yes, I'm excited to see Nick this weekend. Hopefully I don't see him, though. There's very few athletes I get starstruck around. Jose Aldo, Nick Diaz. The list is a little bit longer than that. All right, Cody, 5-12, my brother. I am jonesing to get back to Brazil, by the way. I think I've been 27 times, but it has been a long, long time. And there's nothing like calling fights over there or anywhere internationally, with all due respect to the United States of America. All right. Couple things left to do today as we go sort of knee deep in our UFC 266 preview with predictions and handicapping. We will begin with the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, main event challenge time. We first update the standings. Team Anik 106, Team Florian 91. Our guy Casey Williams, he was happy sending out the standings this week. He got the better of Ken Flo 3-2. Differentiator, Anthony Smith to win by submission for Casey. Ken Flo had Smith to win via TKO. So it's 106-91. And joining us to make picks today, I'm excited to have this guy. We've been sort of going back and forth for a while, trying to find a slot for him. Repping the MMA Takes podcast. Brian Petrie is with us on social media. You can find him at MMA Takes podcast. Brian, good to see you, my brother. How are you?
Good to see you, John. And Kenny, as always, huge fan. Fan of the podcast. Obviously, I listen. I wanted to make it a point that before I stepped on here, I'm ride or die because I had a mop of a hair. And I know my guy, Anik, hates lettuce, hates hair. So we got the wife to buzz it. I'm repping JA right now. So I didn't want any shots. We're buzzing it. Haven't had a buzz in sixth grade, but let's do it. Let's go.
Dude, not only did you just earn a return trip, even if you go 0-7 on our picks today, but as soon as this show's over, I'm going to at MMA Takes Podcast so I can try to find a picture of you with that.
Oh, yeah. There's one. I just had dental surgery, and my hair not only was long, but it was blonde because my wife is a hairstylist. So I was her guinea pig.
Yeah.
And so I'm on a beach vacation. And before he left, I'm like, shave it. We're doing it. Shave it. I'm hopping on JA. I got to shave it.
You look good, man. Well, we appreciate you joining us. And the first fight for us is going to be at lightweight. Dan Hooker, -165. Nasrat Haqparast, +145. And I know you guys know what's going on in terms of the fight before the fight for Dan Hooker. I mean, it's crazy for what a lot of the Kiwis have had to do trying to get out of New Zealand amidst this global pandemic. Looks as though he's going to make it with some governmental help. And of course, Haqparast on the other side, earning a high profile opportunity with two straight wins. Hooker's actually lost two in a row. Brian, what do you think of this matchup at 155 pounds and ultimately who takes it?
This is the toughest one for me to break down. I don't know why. Last time we saw Dan Hooker was really quick. He got knocked out by Michael Chandler. And then Haqparast was this kid on the rise, this, really good striker, Rafael Cordero trained. And then he dropped to Drew Dober. And then he didn't look so good against Alex Munoz, even though it was a win. Short notice fight against Rafi Garcia, still very average to me. And, and Hooker has fought the elite competition. He's like right there. And every time he gets it, he falls back down. He got the Edson Barboza, fell back down. He got the Dustin Poirier, fell back down. I don't want to insult the man and call him a gatekeeper because I think he's very skilled. But at this point, it's almost like a gatekeeper situation at 155. It's like, can he make it there? Can he not? I think he's very, very talented. Nasrat hits hard. Both these guys, their defense is not great. Okay, they like to get in there, like to mix it up. I think Hooker's going to stay long a little bit. I think Haqparast throws bigger shots, and it's a three-round fight, so I like Hooker in a three-round fight. I like it, him kind of piecing them up a little bit and maybe taking over the fight. I think Nasrat is going to wear it by the end of this fight. So give me Dan Hooker. Give me the number. But I don't have the best read on this fight, unfortunately.
All right. Fair enough. Dan Hooker -165, Ken Flo. He had won 7 of 8 before he ran into Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler in successive fights. I don't know how you factor the travel and what Dan Hooker is going to deal with into the handicap, Kenny, but in terms of the matchup, who do you like?
Yeah, listen, I think you got to. That's a definite concern. I think Haqparast is a very dangerous fighter. I think that we haven't quite seen what he can do just yet. I hear, big time stories about him in the gym and what he could do there. But we haven't seen that come to fruition 100%. I do think he's going to be the more powerful guy here. I do think that Hooker does get hit just like Nasrat does as well. And if it comes down to that, I do like Haqparast here. Daniel Hooker coming off that long flight, dealing with all the stress heading into this. I think that's a lot to deal with. I think Dan Hooker has way more experience. He's fought tougher guys. There's no question about that. You can't knock him for those losses that he's had. Those are elite guys for sure. But I don't like the way that this has kind of come together for him. It's a great opportunity for him. He's going to make some money, which is great. But I think it's a lot to deal with. That flight is no joke. The stress of dealing with all that stuff is no joke. And for that reason, I give Haqparast the edge here.
And it's tricky because then after the fight, Hooker will have to quarantine away from his family. I think that's part of the issue, is that preserving the date, because he's sort of set up his life with his re-entry and everything else. It's crazy if you do a little research as to what is going on in terms of New Zealand and Australia and their overall response to COVID-19. By the way, Nasrat Haqparast, Ken Flo, is the guy, and Brian, that they say looks like the mini Kelvin Gastelum.
Yes.
We didn't talk about Domingo fucking Pilardi on this podcast. We talked about it on the UFC telecast. Ken Flo, you know what I'm talking about. Right.
Yes.
He looks like it. I mean, he looks just like it. Oh, he's a handsome guy.
A good looking guy, striking.
But he looks just fucking like, I mean, there's certain angles where it's like, man, Ken Flo hasn't had like a boy's regular haircut in a while, but it's like, I'm calling his fight against Brian Boom Kelleher. And I'm like, dude, like, and I finally said it. The truck went crazy.
That's amazing.
Next up, featured prelim at 135 pounds. Brian, we spent some time on this earlier. The Ray Longo train, Marab Dwalish Willie, -235. Magic Marlon Moraes, +190. Six straight wins for Merab. He has vaulted firmly into title contention. Marais on the other side with the higher ranking, 6 to Merab's 11. Brian, who do you have here?
I love this fight. I love it, this fight. I mean, this is what Merab needs. He needs to step up. I know everyone's kind of shitting on Marlon because, you know, he's been getting knocked. He's got knocked out his last two fights. But those are against elite guys, too. Marlon starts fast. He had that run for a while. He's fought for a title, was a champion outside the UFC. The guy's fucking nails. Now he gets Merab, who's a fucking grappler. Cardio's a weapon. He's a problem. And Merab is so awkward and, dare I say, funky with his striking style. He trains with Aljamain. That sets up his takedowns. And I'm really curious to see how Marlon deals with that. Marlon has really good guillotines. He has one win in the UFC, a couple rear naked choke wins. But is he a lead off his back? Because he's going there. He's going to get put on his fucking back. Right. I really want to know how Merab deals with it on the feet. Merab is a little higher than I would like to play him here, even though I think he's an absolute fucking stud. But listen, I'm not coming on a fucking Ray Longo podcast and picking against Merab Dalashvili. Really, I'm going to get a knock on the door. Give me Merab. I think he's going to win a decision here, but I love this matchmaking. I wish I had the nuts to take plus 190 on Marlon, because I do think Marlon still has a lot in his tank. But Merab's hot right now. Give me Merab.
Give me all this Brian Petrie energy on a Monday afternoon. Ken Flo, Marais has accomplished a lot, obviously, in his career. Major champion outside the UFC. The current form, 2 straight losses. The last one came against Robbie Font, TKO last December. What do you think, Kenny, about Merab here against Magic Marlon Marais?
Yeah, listen, I think that my concern would be for Merab in round one going against Marlon with everything that he brings early in a fight. He's extremely fast, and getting on to that kind of speed can be difficult for guys early on. I think that for Merab, though, his pressure, his consistency, his toughness is going to be the difference here. I think over time, he will kind of rinse out Marlon Marais round by round and eventually get the win. I like Merab here. I think his wrestling will be the difference, his pressure. And for Marlon, this is a tough stylistic matchup for him. So going with Dwalishvili.
Dwalishvili. The pick to click for Ken Flo. All right, pay-per-view opener in the flyweight division, former strawweight champ Jessica Andrade minus 280, Cynthia Calvillo plus 225. So Andrade, really one of the more accomplished women in UFC history, but she has dropped 3 of 4, got finished by Valentina Shevchenko. That was a title fight April 24th of this year. Calvillo, Brian, is coming off a loss to Caitlin Chookagian last November. That ended her 4-fight unbeaten streak. What do you think about Calvillo's chances here against the former champ Andrade?
You know, this is good matchmaking, right? Andrade has fought everybody. Calvillo was supposed to be that next girl, that next fighter, the next step up. You know, she's Team Alpha Male. I believe she has now since left Alpha Male. I could be wrong on that. But I just don't see her really making the right steps. Like, you know, she's not much of a finisher. She's a good wrestler. Her striking's still kind of stagnant. It hasn't really gotten better. But I love me Jessica Andrade. Jessica Andrade will fight anybody, has fought anybody. She's a very short woman, fought at 135, 115. I think 125 is her weight class. I was a little surprised the performance against Valentina. But listen, Valentina's fucking a beast. I mean, Valentina's that good. I was just surprised that Andrade couldn't get up. She got pinned down by Valentina. But on this fight, I love the number too. Minus 280. You're not going to hear me say that much. I'm not a big chalk player here, but Andrade at 280, I love. I think she's that better than Calvillo. I think she has a lot more ways to win. I think Calvillo striking is going to try to get the takedowns. I don't know how successful she's going to get. Give me Andrade here. And I like her big. This is a fight I'm going to be playing in numerous ways.
Very interesting. And you're doing a great job so far with the analysis. Ken Flo, Calvillo ending a 10-month layoff here. And she's a decided underdog. There's no doubt. Plus 225. Are you on the Andrade train as well, Flo, or what?
Yeah, I think that Andrade, you know, her power is significant here against Calvillo. Calvillo's technical, but I just don't see her hurting Andrade. I think her ground game is good, and it can be dangerous. But I don't see her catching her on the ground either. I think her best bet is to try to get on top of Andrade, and I just don't see her having the wrestling to make that happen. So, I'm in the same boat. I like Andrade here.
All right, next up on the pay-per-view main card at heavyweight, Curtis Razor Blades minus 305. Jarzinho Rosenstrike is plus 240. All right, so we'll see if Curtis Blades, guys, can get some distance from what was obviously a very devastating knockout loss to Derek Lewis and what was a main event February 20 of this year. Blades has been a main eventer 4 times for the UFC, has yet to fight for the title. On the other side, Rosenstrike out of Suriname, big power, not a bad loss on his resume. Brian, what do you think about Rosenstrike and Blades, any value on the dog here at all?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and the only reason, the way I'm handicapping this, because I really like Curtis Blades. Listen, Curtis Blades can go in there and dog walk Rosenstrike for three rounds. Take him down and just take him down repeatedly. We've only seen Rosenstrike fight and really fight a grappler in Junior Albini, his UFC debut. He got taken down a few times, ended up coming back and TKO him. This guy's got fucking next level power. This guy, when he fought Augusto Sakai, I didn't think it was that big of a punch. And Sakai's a durable dude. Right. Slept him, put him in the shadow realm. And I just took a chalk play, and I'm not a chalk guy, so give me the dog. Give me plus 240 because Curtis Blades has struggled with power punchers. His only three losses are to Ngannou twice and Derrick Henry. And I think Rosenstrike at this number, you know, there's always that saying, a puncher's chance. I think he's got a hell of a puncher's chance here. And I don't know where Curtis Blades' confidence at, so give me the dog here.
So, Kenny, Rosenstrike has accrued a lot of UFC experience, but he's still very much a developing fighter. The only guys to beat him as a pro, of course, Francis Ngannou rather viciously, and then Ciryl Gane on points, a fight in which Rosenstrike seemingly had no answers. What do you think about Rosenstrike, and what do you think about Curtis Blades and his ability to respond to that Lewis result?
Jeez, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. I think Yair is a very dangerous guy. I really like that left hook, you know, going back. He's really dangerous with that. And that's a shot that he could certainly catch Curtis Blades with. A lot of that kind of depends on how Curtis Blades fights him. If Curtis Blades goes out there and decides to kind of show off his striking and, you know, test that, I think Yair wins that fight. I think Curtis Blades is very inconsistent, even within a fight. We'll see him have a brilliant round, and then he'll go out there and find a way to lose somehow. So for Curtis, he's got to fight smart. He's got to use where he had, you know, he's got to use his wrestling where he has a big advantage. That's what he's got to do in this fight. I think Yair could certainly win this fight, but I like Blades. I think if he fights smart, if he uses the tools that he has, he can go out there and get the win. We've seen him come back strong from horrible losses in the past. I think he can do that here. This is a huge fight for him in his career. The way that I see it is like this is going to be a pivotal moment. Does he get back into his winning ways? Has he learned from his previous fights? Or is he now just another heavyweight that could have been? I know that might be a little bit harsh, but this is a tough fight for him. And Yair's a difficult matchup. So I'm going to go with Blades here. I think he can get it done, but going to be tricky.
I think you set it up beautifully. There's no denying there's a lot of pressure on Curtis Blades coming up here September 25. All right, featured bout. At 170 pounds, Robbie Lawler -115 versus Nick Diaz -105. Scheduled for 5 5-minute rounds. We have a Diaz rule on the podcast where when they fight, you have to give us the round of the method of victory. So last fight for Diaz, we mentioned early 2015, 5 rounds with Anderson Silva. Last professional win for Nick Diaz was my first official day with the UFC, October 29, 2011, UFC 137 against BJ Penn. First meeting between these two, April 2nd, 2004, UFC 47. Nick Diaz knocked out Robbie Lawler. What were you doing then, Cody Mero? You're like 10 years old or something. So, Brian, Lawler, a slight favorite, at least right now on DraftKings Sportsbook. Who wins this featured bout and how do they get it done?
Can we take a minute and just appreciate the Diaz brothers and whole, but Nick Diaz, he hasn't fought in 6 years, hasn't won in 10 years, and we're all talking about him. John's giddy to call his fight. I'm excited like a little kid. The Diaz bros move the needle. I fucking love it. I love this fight. This was actually my very first pay-per-view I ever bought. It was UFC 47. I haven't missed one since. That was my very first one. So this first fight holds a special place in my heart. Now, as far as the fight go, Bob Lawler, you know, the guy hasn't really had a good stretch lately. The Neil Magny fight, I really thought he matched up well with Neil if he could stop his takedown. And physically, he looks great. Robbie Lawler does. He moved camp. I believe he was on Sanford MMA for a while. And I thought he physically looked great, but it's just not there anymore. I don't know if it's gun shyness or what. The guy hasn't had a finish since 2015 against Rory McDonald, which is surprising because he throws hands. You know, he's huge, you know, big power. Enter Nick Diaz. Again, John mentioned it. Hasn't won since 2011 against BJ Penn. Hasn't had a fight since Anderson Silva in 2015. But you know what to expect with Diaz. I don't care if it's 10 years since he's won, 6 years off. He could be 60 in the octagon. He's coming forward. He's throwing hands. He's putting his pity-pat punches together. He's trying to keep his head off the center line. He's going to throw some weird kicks, but he's going to wear down Robbie Lawler. I love that this is a 5-round fight. I love the number. I think the number's right. I think Vegas is right. They're getting two-way action here. But I'm not picking against Nick Diaz here. 2-9 for the win. Let's give me Nick Diaz. And I think he's going to stop him, too. I think it's if you're firing around, I think it's going to be a TKO round four. He's going to wear him down. Robbie's going to just, you know, eat a lot of punches. And then eventually Nick's just going to get him. It could be a club sub, but I do like a finish prop in this fight.
I like that club and sub, but BP is on the Nick Diaz side. And you get underdog points on this show. Minus 105, at least right now, for Nick Diaz. Ken Flo, a little bit of shine for Robbie Lawler. He's fought them all, became the undisputed champ back in 2014. On paper right now at this stage of his career, despite what Brian acknowledged about him physically, because there's no doubt he's in great shape right now. But he has lost four in a row. RDA, Askren, Covington, and then Magny. That fight was August 29th of 2020. So it's been more than a year since Lawler has fought. That being said, he has had seven fights since Nick Diaz last competed in MMA. Diaz Lawler 2, Ken Flo beckons this weekend. Your thoughts?
Yeah, crazy. You know, I think that Robbie Lawler is a guy who's extremely dangerous. I think he is a very different fighter, obviously, than the first time they had fought. He was very raw, certainly had the power, had the aggression, but didn't know how to channel it, didn't know how to pace himself, didn't have the sophistication that he has now. And the same can be said for Nick Diaz. This is a guy who knows how to employ his game plan, knows how to use the right tactics and at the right time. And he has been blessed with that Diaz chin and that Diaz durability. And he's proven that durability is a true superpower. And, you know, we haven't seen him as of late. Of course, he obviously had, you know, some suspensions and different things. And you know, I'm curious to see what kind of Robbie Lawler we're going to see and what kind of Nick Diaz we're going to see. Nick Diaz's last win was this. His last win was the month that I retired in 2011. I think October 2011 was my last fight. I'm curious to see how he's going to look. I think he has stayed training for the most part. I think that he has learned a lot, and he's an excellent martial artist. I think it's going to be tough for Robbie Lawler to take him out, but it is possible for Robbie Lawler to knock any man out. He has kind of power. But I like Nick Diaz here as well. I think his durability, his ability to put together combinations, his ability to pressure at the right time. And I think because we have two southpaws going at it here, that is always kind of, not always, but it's often kind of taken Robbie Lawler out of his game, especially when you have a guy who can jab as well as Nick Diaz. I think that could potentially throw off Robbie Lawler. I like what they're saying is in Robbie Lawler's camp. They say they want to blend the aggression with you know, the technical ability that he has now. But I think it's going to be difficult to do against Nick Diaz. I like Nick here. There's a lot of unknowns in this fight, but I'm going to go with Nick Diaz. I like Nick Diaz. Let's go TKO round five.
Whew. You guys are getting me excited. You guys are getting me excited. By the way, Brian, when Kenny retired in 2011, he made it official in December. I was really holding out hope for one more, like a super fight at like 55 or 65, but the back just wouldn't hold up. You know, he's not going to present a lesser version. He's just not, you know, he's not a prize fighter in the truest sense. He cashed the check, but he wasn't fighting for money. He was fighting for glory. All right. Yes. Co-headliner for the UFC Women's Flyweight Championship, Valentina Shevchenko, -1375. Lauren Murphy, +800. Shevchenko trying to make it six consecutive successful title defenses. Murphy on the other side has won five in a row. And if she wins six in a row, she will have effectively flipped the entire mixed martial arts world on its axis. Brian Petrie, Colonel Mustard with the lead pipe in the octagon. Shevchenko versus Murphy. Who wins it? How do they get it done, Brian?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a saying in you know, when you bet college football, you don't win money betting against Alabama. You don't win money betting for Valentina. I mean, she's always so high. I mean, unless you have an Ian Parker bankroll, what are we doing here with this number? Lauren Murphy, though, I love her story. What she's come from, what she's done, what she's battled back from. I mean, that's fantastic. She's physical in the octagon. I don't think she's great anywhere. She's like a jack of all trades. She likes to get in there and mix it up. Get you to the ground, beat you up in the clinch, but like her stand up doesn't really explode, you know, blow me away. And her jiu-jitsu's good. I mean, don't get me wrong, but it's not there. But I love her story. She deserves this fight. +800. I wish I put my nuts on the table and be like, yeah, I'm taking this 800. Yeah. I'm going to stay away from this fight betting altogether. I think Valentina is great. There's a lot of arguments out there that she might be the best female fighter in the world, which is wrong. She's not. Amanda Nunes is. But I like Valentina here. I think she's going to get it done. Lauren Murphy. just what really shied me away was the Joanne Calderwood fight. Last fight out, I actually thought she lost. She'd slowed down a little bit. All respect to JoJo. I love JoJo Calderwood, but you know, I think Valentina is a different beast, and Valentina has been taking people down lately. She's not just a striker. She'll get on top of you, elbow your fucking head off. I like Valentina by TKO round two. I think the first round is going to be rough for Lauren, and I think the second round, Valentina is prioritizing a finish for this fight. So give me Valentina. I think maybe a prop bet is a play here, but 1375, I can't touch.
All right, Shevchenko, round two TKO for Brian Petrie. I believe Murphy would become the first Alaskan-born UFC champion, born in Anchorage. Ken Flo, obviously down, you know, 15 points in the standings. If you did pick Lauren Murphy and she won, it would be a 9-pointer for you. So perhaps some incentive there. But obviously, Shevchenko prohibitively priced, according to Brian. What do you think about the co-main event?
Yeah, listen, I think that Brian did a very good breakdown here. I think that Valentina is so well-rounded and so good everywhere that, you know, it's tough for any woman in the world in that weight class to even give her a good fight. I think that Lauren Murphy is as tough as they come. You know, I think physically and technically she's made some big time changes, you know, with her game. The one thing where, you know, that really concerns me for her, especially early on in this fight, is the fact that she stands right in front of her opponents when she's throwing combinations. And if she's watching her work or standing right in front of someone like Valentina Shevchenko, it's just not a good idea. And even if that's like not a part of their game plan, that's just something that she does. And it's a hard habit to break. One doesn't just change that overnight. And it certainly doesn't happen, you know, from camp to camp, from fight to fight. So, to me, I think Shevchenko is going to take advantage of that. I think she catches her probably early in the fight. I would love to go with round. I was going to go with round two as well. I'll go with round one here. And this is no disrespect to Lauren Murphy. What she's accomplished here at this point of her career to get here is just amazing. But I think that she's dealing with a woman in Valentina Shevchenko who just has too many weapons and too much firepower here.
She likes those extra rubies for title defenses on her championship belt. All right, main event for the UFC featherweight title. How you going? Alexander Volkanovski, minus 160. Brian Ortega, plus 140. So we mentioned earlier this fight initially slated for March. They coached opposite each other on the Ultimate Fighter. Now it shall be done. Ortega, just one fight since his first title shot, which came against Max Holloway late 2018. But of course, what an appearance it was for T-City last October. High-profile main event win over the Korean zombie Chan Sung Jung on Fight Island. That has earned him a second shot at Volkanovski, who has won 19 in a row, BP. Who do you have in the main event, and how do they get it done?
I love this fight. This is what you buy the pay-per-view. I mean, I know people are coming for Nick Diaz, but this is high-level MMA, and that's what I love. I mean, there's no way this is going to be a walkover for either guy. Alexander Volkanovski, for whatever reason, it stuck in my dumb brain. I fade the guy. I think it's 1-1 against Max, but both times I was against him. I was against him against the Chan Mednes. I was against him against Jose Aldo. I fade this guy. I don't know why. He's an elite guy. There's nothing wrong with him. He's great. He's nice. I watched the Ultimate Fighter. Seems like a great dude.
Yeah.
But Brian Ortega, you know, when he came in, there was a lot of fights where he was like losing. And I'm like, oh, this kid, you know, he's losing a little bit. And then he wins and he lives. And that just shows to me early on in your young career, when you're getting whooped on by, you know, keeps getting taken down by Clay Guida, and you come back and choke him out. That's incredible. And I love Brian Ortega coming back. I believe he switched a few things in his coaching. Came back on that zombie fight
right. And
just looked phenomenal. I mean, that spinning elbow was incredible. His stand-up looked great. We know he's lethal on the ground. This guy, anywhere the fight goes, is a problem. Volkanovski, you know, this guy likes to mix his strikes up really well. His footwork is phenomenal. I mean, we saw in the Max Holloway fight, his leg kicks are great, and he likes to wrestle a little bit. I think that's going to be a mistake if he tries that with Brian Ortega, because Ortega's got that fucking guillotine from death. But listen, when you're looking at the numbers, again, I'm just going to go old, dumb Brian Brain and fade Volkanovski again. I'm going to go Ortega by the points. Plus 140, I like it. I think that's a good bet as well. I think we're getting a new champ here. I really like the improvements Ortega made in the zombie fight. There's no walk in the park. And I actually like Ortega. I think the easier route would be maybe sub, because he's so good everywhere. I actually like it by KO. You know, Volkanovski's been wobbled a little bit. He got dropped in the Max fight. Chad Mendes touched him a little bit.
Yep.
I think Ortega can touch him, and I think that's going to be a nice juicy plus number when the props come out. So give me Ortega round two. I think we're getting a new champ, boys.
All right. Brian Petrie likes Brian Ortega round two, knockout or TKO. So Ken Flo Volkanovski turns 33 4 days after the fight. And again, I think part of the reason he's not as celebrated as some of the other champions is that inactivity. This will just be his second title defense. But a lot of things make him dangerous. He is the rightful betting favorite here. What do you think about the main event, Ken Flo, at UFC 266?
You know, I think the other reason why he perhaps is not as celebrated is the fact that he doesn't make it as exciting as, say, some other guys, but he does exactly what he needs to do to win. And that counts for something. And Brian, I've definitely written him off many times as well. He's quiet, but again, he does exactly what he needs to do to win. I think his MMA IQ, his intelligence, is something that is vastly underrated. While I do agree that Max Holloway won that second fight, there's no doubt about it that it was close. Yeah. I think that Volko is, a guy that does his preparations. Now, I'm not sure how I feel about the fact that he wasn't able to be with City Kickboxing here for this fight. I think that is interesting, but, and you look at Ortega and what he's done. I think he looked very, very different in his last fight against Korean Zombie. He looked like a guy who had way more weapons. He looked way more comfortable out there. I remember when I criticized his loss against Holloway, and I said that he needed to make some serious coaching changes. And I can't tell you how many messages I got and say how disrespectful that was. And,
yeah,
you know, that's the guy that got him there. Well, he did make those coaching changes, right. And we've seen a big difference now. I think he's extremely dangerous. If there's a guy that gets a finish, I would be leaning towards Ortega. He's a submission machine. I think he's got a lot of tools on the feet that make him flashy and dangerous. However, I got to go with consistency here. I like Volkanovski. I see him winning here. I see him winning by decision. He could maybe get the win as well by finish, but I'm going to go with consistency. I'm going to go with his ability to win each round. So I like Volkanovski, and I think it's going to be an unbelievable fight.
Oh, man, you guys are doing all my prep for me. If you want more from Brian Petrie when he gets back from vacation at MMA Takes Podcast. Hey, brother, thanks for stepping up. Great job with the handicap, and you can be sure we will talk to you down the line, my friend.
Perfect. Thank you so much, guys. Favorite podcast. I love you guys. Kenny, big fan. John,
you're the man.
You're a legend. Man. Thanks, guys.
My man.
Thanks,
Brian. Thank you, brother. Brian Petrie with us from the MMA Takes Podcast today for the main event challenge. All right, one final order of business. It is the Pick to Click. It's presented by Oddshark.com, the most reliable source for sports betting information with the latest odds, insight, and analysis on everything UFC. You got to check out Oddshark.com/UFC. Get all you need to know before placing bets on the upcoming fights this weekend. The Oddshark Fight Center is there, outstanding resource for fans and media alike. All the matchup information, and it's all presented in a nice, ingestible way. They're also giving you all the odds from various sports books as well, which is sort of nice to take a look as to some of the prices and how they bounce around. And I can tell you firsthand, their experts have all been watching and capping MMA for a long time. So check it out in advance of UFC 266, oddshark.com/UFC. Don't forget the second S.
Time now for the Pick to Click. The Pick to Click.
All I have to do is bet on the winner, and I'll never lose.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
All right, and now joining us, sports betting analyst from oddshark.com. He is Joe Osborne on social media at JTFOZ and on Instagram, Paper Chaser. Joe, my man, it's great to see you. No pay-per-view week is complete without you, man. How you doing?
Guys, I'm good. Football's back. You guys know I love the grind of another football season, right? So we're about 2 weeks in at this point. And if somebody tells you they have the NFL figure out this season, they're lying to you. So don't listen to them, right? We need a few more weeks to figure this thing out, I think.
At least. And I was thinking about you a little bit yesterday. Of course, I'm here in South Florida and your Miami Dolphins lose to the Bills 35-0. I'm sorry to bring it up, but of course, I'm driving around taking my kids to school today. And you should hear the tone of South Florida sports radio. I mean, what a difference a week makes after a win over the Pats 7 days.
Yeah, it brought back some familiar memories, right? I was pretty pleased with the ugly win they got in New England. You take that as an underdog 100 times out of 100. And then you were hoping, you know, they got their ass kicked in the last regular season game last year versus the Bills. And
right,
hoping for a bit of redemption. Right off the bat, it turned to shit. And it
right
stayed
away,
like
yeah,
shit for the entire game. So, yeah, I was looking forward to that game, and sadly, it went about as bad as it could possibly go. So we're on to the Raiders in week three.
Well, I can't emphasize enough, if you are betting Major League Baseball down the stretch, which has actually burned me quite a bit, or betting the NFL, you want to follow Joe Osborne. All right, I'm going to start with Valentina Shevchenko and Lauren Murphy, because I'm curious how you approach a fight like this when you're looking at a minus 1400 favorite that seemingly cashes every time, but it does get tricky when you go proposition hunting because she can knock you out. She can submit you. Will you have action on Shevchenko, and do you give Lauren Murphy any crack at plus 800 or so?
I do not. And I do have action on Shevchenko. I think it's my favorite spot on the entire card, guys. And it's the Shevchenko by KO/TKO prop coming in at around minus 135, depending on where you're doing your sports betting. And it's really a simple handicap, guys. Lauren Murphy gets hit a lot. She has a negative striking differential within the UFC. Two of her last four fights, she's been on the wrong end of over 100 significant strikes. These are three-round fights, as you guys know, that she's been in. Now she's going up against one of the most dynamic strikers in the sport, regardless of weight class, male or female. Shevchenko is one of the best that there is in all of the UFC. And she has TKO victories in three of her last five fights, all coming within three rounds. So I don't know how Murphy is going to survive five rounds here with her, right? So there's just not a whole lot of competition for Shevchenko right now within that division. Murphy, more of a brawler, and I think she's going to be in trouble. I think we're going to see Shevchenko get the timing down, land a counter, and get the TKO. Minus 135, that is a great spot in my opinion.
Joe, out of all the fights here, I think the one with the most unknowns is Robbie Lawler against Nick Diaz here. It's a tough one because we haven't seen, obviously Nick in a long time. And with Lawler, you don't know who's going to show up. How do you see this fight, man?
I think you're kind of guessing in this one if you're trying to handicap Nick Diaz a little bit. And my question about Diaz is, okay, what's his motivation coming into this fight? Is he back in love with the sport and wants to get in the mix for a title shot? Or is he there to collect a check, which is probably a pretty big one, I would imagine, if he's coming back here, right? So with that said, with the odds virtually a pick 'em, I'm going to go with the guy who has at least one win over the last 9 years and the guy that's accumulated rounds versus some pretty good competition over the past decade in Robbie Lawler. Like I said, who knows what Nick Diaz's motivation is. He's been pretty aloof, to be completely honest. I think that's a good word to describe him when you've seen him in the media and things of that nature. So, yeah, I don't know what his motivation is. Part of me thinks it might be there just to collect a check. So I'll go with Lawler, who's been the much more active fighter. He's obviously on the downswing of his career, too. But I think you're kind of guessing with Nick Diaz, and that's a bit dangerous, you know. You can guess that he'll be back to his old self with the pitter-patter, high-volume striking. He's probably going to have the durability. He's going to have the gas tank. But I think there's more to support Robbie here, especially at a pick'em.
And I like the way you phrased it in terms of the round accumulation for Robbie Lawler. And for me, again, I have to stay out of these conversations because of what my job is. But largely, it's a simple handicap for me. I would have tremendous pause as a bettor walking to the window betting on Nick Diaz when his last win came in 2011. So maybe I would lay off if I wasn't convicted on the Lawler side, but I don't know. I will admit to being surprised that this fight seems to be taking two-way action right now because of all the unknowns, at least on the Nick Diaz side for me. And by the way, Cody points out, last disclosed purse for Nick Diaz, $500,000 at UFC 183 in 2015, but he was fined 20% of that purse.
Nice chunk of change there.
Yeah. All right. Before we let you fly, main event, Alexander Volkanovsky minus 160, Brian T. City, Ortega plus 140. Will you have a bet on the featherweight title fight?
Yeah, I think there's more to like about Volkanovski here, especially now at minus 160. I think he opened around minus 185, which I was kind of lukewarm on. But I think there's more pointing towards him coming into this fight. You know, he hasn't lost since 2013, guys. 19 straight wins, 9-0 in the UFC. And here's what I like, 9-0 in the UFC, and he's outlanded his opponent in terms of significant strikes in all nine of those fights. Wow. Meanwhile, you take a look at Brian Ortega. He's been outlanded in 6 of his 9 UFC fights, and he's put himself in positions where he's fighting from behind from time to time, and that's due to that negative striking differential that he does have. So I like Volkanovski in this one. I think the price is fair, minus 160. Now, the one red flag that throws a bit of a wrench in my confidence in Volkanovski is Ortega's most recent performance versus the Korean Zombie. You know, the guy virtually disappears for 2 years after Max Holloway. I think it's fair to say Max Holloway embarrassed him, right? So he disappeared for 2 years. He comes back and then he puts on an unbelievable performance versus the Korean Zombie right there. That said, though, that's a one fight sample size. I will go with the bigger sample size from what we've seen from both of the guys. And I like Volkanovski here to retain minus 160, fair price. And like I said, he's outlanded everyone in every fight he's been in. And look at some of the names. Max Holloway twice, Jose Aldo, two of the most decorated strikers in the UFC, at least in that weight class, right? So, yeah, I like Volkanovski to retain the championship here in what will probably be a long fight. I wouldn't be surprised to see it go the distance.
Joe, and I think something to mention, you know, to your point, you know, while he did look impressive against Korean Zombie and while Ortega did show that he had new skills, that was like one of the guys where he was going to have an advantage in the striking differential. Korean Zombie gets hit so much in his fight. So it was a good way for him to look good in a lot of ways, but we shall see. It's going to be a great fight.
All right. On Twitter at JTFOZ, on Instagram, he is Paper Chaser Joe. He's been really hot with the UFC stuff. By the way, I just have to acknowledge your Derek Brunson play at plus 160 or so, because you sit in the back room, you hear our two cappers both pick on the other side of that fight, and you sort of lay back in the cut, you stick to your guns, and that's why they pay you the big bucks, I guess, Joel.
Yeah, well, maybe we had a little bit of luck with Darren Till was injured apparently going into that fight, so maybe a bit of luck worked out for me. But ultimately, my sentiment in that one is that I thought Till has been overrated, and Brunson's been dramatically underrated, and it worked to my advantage in that one, so I was happy to collect on that fight.
All right, my man. Well, I'll be watching your every move over this NFL season. We will talk to you in a few weeks in advance of UFC 267. Joe Osborne, thank you very much, my friend.
All right, guys. Good luck, and good luck to all the listeners out there.
Good stuff, Joe.
I like how he always wishes the listeners good luck on the board, you know. All right. Thank you all for being with us today. Thank you to our guests, Ray Longo, Brian Petrie, Joe Osborne. Don't forget, all the merchandise can be found at AnnickFlorianPodcast.com. The One More Sleep merch is at millions.co. Also, Ken Flo's YouTube channel is live. All sorts of Brazilian jiu-jitsu stuff. It's not like a tour of his home in North Carolina. It's BJJ stuff. So if that's what you want, FloTube is live. And we're back in your life next Monday, September 27th. Huge UFC 266 recap show forthcoming. Hope you'll join us also for the UFC Hall of Fame induction ceremony live on UFC Fight Pass Thursday night. With that, for the fucking legend, Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thank you all for watching, subscribing, for liking. Tell your friends. We'll talk to you in less than 7 days. Until then, yo later. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.